This week on the Berwick World Show, we talk about UX processes, deploying projects, and podcasting. This week's show is sponsored by Proposify and Teacup Analytics. Welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast for all aspects of digital design, development and strategy. My name is Paul Boag. Joining me on this week's show is Dan Edwards, Marcus Ellington, Sam Barnes and Ryan Taylor. Hello all.
Hello.
Hello all.
Everybody's bright and cheerful on a Monday morning.
But we're not really, are they? Especially you, no. Paul. You sound like you're still in bed, actually.
Well, to be honest... The honest truth is we've got our in-laws staying at the moment.
Right.
And they got up and got in the shower just at that key moment. So as a result, I'm sitting here in my dressing gown.
Oh, bless.
I know, right? So sad. So how is everybody? Dan, Ryan, you got to meet up this week. That's a rare occasion for you guys, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. We've not seen each other since November. Dan came up and met Matilda when she was born, but we've not seen each other since then. It's a bit hard to get away when you've got a newborn.
So what do you do when you meet up?
Eat. Well, as it turns out, eat, yeah.
Eat?
Yeah. Eat and eat and eat and eat and eat. And
right.
Yeah. We didn't mean to. But...
I didn't mean to.
It just happened. We slipped.
It was food.
In the way that some people, you know, have one too many drinks and kind of, you know, stumble home, we kind of have one too many courses.
I understand.
Right. So how's the weight then, guys? We're nice and rolling around.
Well, this is a weird thing, right? Because for the last few weeks, I've been trying to, you know, watch what I eat a little bit, and you know, I'm not drinking as much, and it's been going okay. But like, I'm not losing like any major weight or anything. And so this week I thought, right, this is going to be like a write off. You know, we've eaten out at least twice a day, every day. We've drunk, and I lost 3 pounds this week. So, you know, something to be said for eating out excessively.
Okay, right. The new diet plan.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah,
drop that gym membership and fit another meal in.
Yeah,
I have a theory on this because I have theories like on things like this, and because I'm always kind of slight. I eat too much because I'm a bit of a Labrador and I can't help it.
A Labrador? How does that work?
The Labradors they're missing a gene, or they have a gene that just means they'll just keep eating till they die. You have to kind of pull them away from the food.
What a fantastic thing to know. Thank you, Marcus.
So I've always described myself as a bit of a Labrador because I'm similar. I'm not quite as bad as I used to be when I was younger. Therefore, I occasionally think, ooh, you're getting a bit tubby. I need to lose some weight. And I find with losing weight, it doesn't come off until... a month or 6 weeks after you do the diet. So I reckon, Dan, therefore, you were doing well a month or 6 weeks ago, and you'll put the weight back on again in a month's time from all the being fat stuff you've done with.
Oh, well, that's depressing.
There you go. Sorry about that.
You got that to look forward to now.
So now I think I've done really... Yeah.
You didn't actually think you'd done well, and instead of it just being a freak of nature, you know, like, I've lost 3 pounds, but you can't have done, you've just eaten 3 tons of food.
He thinks it's his X-Man superpower, that's what it is.
Well, we went to see Logan as well while I were down.
Oh, was that any good?
It's brilliant. It's devastating, but it's brilliant. But yeah.
I hear the best bit about it is the fact that it's got a teaser for Deadpool at the end.
Nah.
You know, I found this out, Ryan. You know that trailer I sent you?
Mm-hmm.
That's at the end of it.
I think that's why everybody was still saying in cinema, because I'd heard that there was no credit thing related to the film, but everybody was still sat around and you're looking around thinking, I can't be bothered waiting, but what are they waiting for?
Yeah, I know. It's that lemming thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just follow the crowd. Yeah. Well, you missed out on a Deadpool trailer.
Well, because I've seen it since.
Well, yeah, so have I.
That's what you choose.
And it was very...
You don't miss anything this day and age.
No, that's true. I've got to say, I have got a very much a teenage sense of humour. Deadpool just makes me laugh like a drain.
Oh, yeah. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
It was so funny.
And no one could do it apart from Ryan Reynolds. I can't imagine anyone else in that role. He's just Deadpool.
Exactly. So Logan is depressing then, is it?
It's just emotional. It's quite emotional. And it's nothing like any of the previous. In fact, X-Men Last Stand, the third one, they did, was on last night, and it's so cheesy and cool. I mean, it was before, but it just feels so much more now that you've watched. Because even Wolverine, the one that he did in Japan, is kind of more. What's that?
Superhero-y.
Well, no, because the X-Men stuff are kind of superhero-y. It's more grittier, you know what I mean?
More grown up,
that's it. Whereas Logan feels... It almost... Yeah, it's just a very mature film. And obviously it's quite dark as well. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know... He swings his claws and blood splats across the screen rather than before when he swung his claws. You know, it were like a scalpel blade, so precise that there was no blood whatsoever. You know, people just fell over and died, and that were it. So it's really good. It's really good.
Right, it was quite funny, actually. Ryan, we came back, obviously, that evening, and Ryan was just quiet, like he'd been to, a friend's funeral or something. You know? He was just so quiet. I was processing it. So we won't spoil anything for anybody, but, yeah, it's a brilliant, brilliant film.
Oh, good. Oh, I might go and see that. I was going to wait until it kind of came out on DVD or whatever. Things don't come out on DVD. What do you say these days? It's not DVD, is it? You think they come out digital download, streaming.
Tape it on video, Paul.
Yeah, I'll record it off TV. I'll watch it on my phonograph. I don't know.
I'm 50 now, and so is my wife, and I don't ever want to... Talking about eating a lot of food, I've eaten my body weight in food, and I think I've drunk my body weight in alcohol as well, and I might die.
You might die?
I want to put my head on the microphone. I was all right when I woke up this morning. I was like, oh, I've got away with that. And now I feel, ugh.
Well, you can't do that at your age.
It's a whole weekend, and it was a whole weekend the previous weekend. And it's like, I don't want to play anymore.
You can't do that, Marcus. It's not good for you. You're going to give yourself a heart attack. You'll end up getting... You know what you lot will end up getting? You'll end up getting gout.
Yeah.
They reckon that's coming back, don't they, gout?
Yes, one of my friends gets gout. He's quite a lot older than me, but yes. And it's... I'm sure it's alcohol-related.
Yeah, definitely. Of course it is.
Or lack of kind of proper food. It's, what are you having for dinner tonight?
Beer. Beer and curry. There you go. Can you get gout from curry? I'm sure you
probably
can. So I didn't believe you, Marcus, but apparently Labradors do have an eating gene.
Told you.
At least according to the Daily Mail.
Oh, well.
No,
it's
actually.
Sort of
no.
Knowledge.
The second.
That probably
the
means
second,
the opposite then, Paul.
No, the second result immediately after the Daily Mail is Cambridge University. So. That says something about Google, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There's something quite not right there, is there? Where Daily Mail comes first, followed by Cambridge University. There you go. Cheerful.
But it's one of the reasons why Labradors are the most popular dog in the world. It's because they're so trainable. Because they'll do anything, literally anything for food.
That's like me. You could train
I'm
them.
The same.
But that's why there's so many fat Labradors as well, because people don't realize they just think their dogs are hungry, and they'll just feed them and feed them and feed them and feed them. So
it's true, they don't have to be
a bit like having a teenager in that regards.
No, but teenagers can eat and eat and eat and eat.
Yes, that's true, without actually getting any fatter.
Yes.
Hey, there's enough of this Labrador talk. There's something much more important to talk about.
Really?
This is really important. World-changingly important. My book's available for pre-order.
Oh, can't I just have one when it comes out?
What do you know? You've got pre-order it. You don't think I've given you one for free, Marcus? What do you think I'm made of? Money?
Yes.
You've wrote another book, Paul?
Yeah, when your brain is as full of brainy stuff as me, and you're so good with what words are, you know, you have to keep producing these things.
Go on, then. What's your book about, Paul?
Do you not know? No, God, it's like you pay no interest in my life whatsoever. You know, I just presume that everyone hangs on every word I say and follows everything I do every moment of every day.
I've always kind of treated you like, you know, the automated voice on the end of the phone. So whenever you start talking, I just get quiet and listen. Because you like that, you know, because I'm used to listening to you all the time and not being able to interact with you on podcasts. So.
Well, I'm fine with that. I like it when people just listen to me, but you obviously haven't been because I've been talking about this book for bloody ages. So it's more like I'm just background noise to you, aren't I, basically, Ryan? That's what we're saying.
You just put so much stuff out there, Paul, that, yeah, you do just become background noise, you know.
I've always been a great believer of quantity over quality. That's right, isn't it?
That's what it's absolutely spot on, Paul. Yeah.
I thought it was that, yeah.
Keep throwing stuff at the wall.
Yeah, eventually something might stick. Well, it seems to work for me.
Is this your user experience revolution book, Paul?
You've just Googled that,
I
Dan.
I have not, Paul. I hand on heart, I can say that I saw a tweet the other day.
There we go. Good man.
It reminded me of Jamie's food revolution.
Oh, no.
User experience revolution.
That makes me feel really good. Has he seriously written a food revolution book?
Well, his thing is a food revolution, isn't it?
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I've associated with Jamie Oliver.
He's all right. He's
I love Jamie. Annoying.
What's wrong with our Jamie?
He's a twat. No, he really
that was me harshly of Jamie Oliver.
I didn't know he was so divisive. I was quite indifferent to Jamie.
Yeah, I don't really care. Yeah. I think he's great. The work he's done over the years is fantastic. He's annoying, but you know, all the stuff on his current program, Jamie and Jimmy's, they have the food fight thing every week.
Which, yeah, I really enjoy that show.
Yeah, no. You're wrong, Paul.
So we took the shine away from Paul there and put it onto Jamie Oliver, which.
Whose new book is
Cooking with Boag.
I could do a cooking book. How difficult can it be?
You peel
the plastic off the top and put it in the microwave. That's cooking, isn't it?
No, Paul, what I want to see is a motorhome cooking show with you. That's what I want to see.
Oh, no, I don't cook in the motorhome. My wife won't let me do anything in the motorhome. Well, not that we've got a motorhome anymore.
Didn't mean to bring up such a sad thing.
Well, no, it's not sad. It's like...
Don't try and hide it, Paul. It's absolutely fine.
I've got to let it all out. I never wanted the motorhome in the first place. It was my wife's thing. But I did get into it, I must admit.
It was that whole Breaking Bad phase you went through, wasn't it?
Oh, God, the thought of Paul in his boxer shorts just popped into my head. Jesus.
Oh, no, that disturbs me.
There's a Photoshop task there, isn't there?
No.
Breaking Bad.
No, that's a completely different film, mate.
Can I tell you about this book or what?
Yeah, go on then.
I want to. So I'm very excited. User Experience Revolution. It's... Basically, it's aimed at people who want to change the organizations they work in. And everybody goes, oh, you know, there's nothing I could do. I work in such a big organization. They don't get user experience. My job is shit. Nobody appreciates me. So it's for people that are in that kind of situation. And it's a kind of step-by-step guide of how you can get people to take user experience seriously. Lots of practical things you can do. And it's available for pre-order. Which is really cool. You can go to boag.world/UX book. And if you pre-order it before it comes out, you'll get the ebook version early than everybody else. And you'll also get a set of cards, downloadable cards, which are like individual little ideas of things that you can do in order to improve your work environment and get people to take UX more seriously. And you get 20% off, so it's worth pre-ordering. Marcus, go pre-order now.
As I say, I'm waiting for my hardback copy
signed.
Yes, absolutely,
yeah, because that'll really add to the value of it.
By the illustrator. Is there an illustrator?
There is an illustrator, yeah. Yeah, she's really good.
Well, Marcus, how about you get your signed? I don't get mine signed. Then we'll just AB it on eBay. See what happens.
See which. Yeah. Split testing.
Yes, done.
That's a terrible idea.
You are setting yourself up for this, though, Paul. Come on.
I don't think any of you lot have written a book, have you?
Yeah,
let alone. Oh yeah, you have, Ryan. I forgot.
Eat that, bollock.
It was that significant in the web design arena that I didn't even remember you'd written it.
Yeah, well, there you go. It was not on a topic that's beyond your comprehension. That's why you didn't pay any attention.
Yes, of course. Sam, you definitely should write one.
I know. I actually enjoy writing more than anything else, but just haven't got around to it. I've been published in a book, like a couple of chapters here and there, but I don't know. I think it was you told me, like, it wasn't... I'm not going to become a millionaire, so...
Oh, no, you won't get rich out of it.
Yeah.
No, it's all ego. That's why I've written so many.
I know, but you say it gives ego. You credibility, and I think it will actually do the opposite for me. I think I'll...
You reckon it'll undermine
you. Yeah, exactly. I just keep it light, you know? A little bit here, a little bit there. Don't let them get too close.
Don't let them find out too much, I think. Yeah. Yeah, notice that I don't suggest that Marcus writes a book. I think that would be just a terrible idea.
If I did, it would have to be a story.
You'd write a sci-fi novel.
Yeah, I would love to do that, but I think it would take me 5 years to write it, probably.
Well,
we're not doing anything else.
Yeah.
Maybe when I retire, that'll be my job. I'll write a book.
I've got to say, I'd love to write a sci-fi book. I lie in bed because I can't sleep and plan sci-fi books. That's what I do, lying in bed at night.
Maybe you should read sci-fi books and they'll send you to sleep. That's what I do.
Oh, no, I do. No, they have the opposite effect on me. They get me all, you know, I get so into it that I then can't sleep.
But do you actually read words off a page?
Yes, I do.
No, you don't. You listen to audio.
No, that's when I'm in a car.
Okay. Well, I'll let you off.
No. In bed, I'll read a Kindle.
Because after a while, if I do about 20 pages, my eyes just won't stay open anymore and I'm gone.
The big problem I have at the moment is I've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn on the PS4. And that means I definitely can't sleep.
What's that, Paul?
It's
from an old man.
It sounds like the most ridiculous. We really ought to get up with the show at some point.
Just think.
It's awesome.
It sounds like the most ridiculous premise ever for a book. So basically, it's you're like a caveman tribal, well, woman, actually, a cavewoman tribal kind of person who goes through this post-apocalyptic world killing robot dinosaurs, which makes it sound terrible. But I have to say, when you get into it and you find out about it all, it's one of the best pieces of sci-fi writing in a video game I've ever seen. Really very good. Isn't it, Ryan? You've got to see it.
Yes, it's excellent. It's excellent.
Okay. Have you finished it yet?
Well, no, because I was down in Chichester when it came through the post, and Amazon even rubbed it in and sent me a text message saying, your game has arrived. And it's like, yeah, no, I can't play it until the weekend. And then obviously I had to spend time with family because they'd not seen me for 3 days, the annoying buggers. So I've had a few hours. But yes, it is very, very good. It's very immersive.
I'm so near the end now.
Don't spoil anything.
No, I won't. Don't worry.
You must have skipped like so much if you're right near the end, because it's about a 60-hour game. Either that or you haven't done any work for
40
days.
Hours a game and I haven't done any work.
Right, there you go then.
That's what's been going on there. Nice. Anyway, talking of work... Should we actually talk about like digital stuff?
Oh, do we have to?
I know it sucks, doesn't it? We'll talk about a sponsor first to warm up to it, because you don't need to say anything during the sponsor bit. And it's Teacup Analytics again, which I really like. So as you guys know, Teacup is something I use all the time, because analytics can be really overwhelming, especially when you kind of point clients at it and you can show them loads of information. And they, you know, you open them up to something like Google Analytics and they take one look at it and they get paralysis. They don't know what to focus on, what to look at. And it also leads to a tendency to look at what I call the vanity metrics, the kind of stuff that's on the initial dashboard of Google Analytics, which are really useful things like user sessions, or bounce rates. And there's no kind of context to stuff like that. You know, user sessions, the number of user sessions won't actually tell you very much about the performance of your website. It just tells you about how good your marketing and advertising is to drive people to the website. Something like bounce analytics Bounce rates, for example, bounce rates do matter in some situations, but on other situations, if people arrive exactly the site that exactly the page they're looking for, and it tells them exactly what they need to know, which is obviously a good thing, then you're going to have a really high bounce rate. So you need to be very careful about these vanity metrics, and that's the problem with things like Google Analytics, is it just overwhelms you with so much information, you end up looking at those kinds of things. Well, Teacup, which is built on top of Google Analytics, you don't need to do anything, install any new software at all on your website. Teacup focuses on answering real questions that people have. So questions about, you know, what users are doing, you know, how you can improve the site, those kinds of things. And it presents all of that in very simple metrics. So it rates your performance on those different things in like an A to, well, I was going to say A to Z, but it's not A to Z, it's A to D, I think, rating system. So clients absolutely love it because of that, because it makes everything so obvious. And they can tell, you know, what you've done and the benefits of what you've done on the site, because they can see those analytics improve. And it's also really good because it'll make recommendations about how the site could be improved, which obviously, if you're a web design agency, means extra work for you. So very good. Check it out at boag.world/teacup. Okie dokie. Who hasn't started for a while? Marcus, you haven't started for a while.
I started last week, Paul. Oh. That's how much attention you pay.
Okay. Dan, what about you?
Ooh. Well, I've got... I sent you a thing.
Yeah, you did. You're now not going to do that thing.
No, I am going to do it, but I don't know how long it will be as a cover piece. So I do have a secondary thing if we get stuck or if we need more.
If I need to come back to you. No, okay. I'm sure it's all right to have a short thing. Short
okay,
things
cool.
Good.
It's all right to... Okay, sorry. Being a child.
Dad, how old are you? It's not length, it's girth.
Carry on. I wasn't going to go there, Paul.
No.
Anyway.
You were. You already have.
I simply laughed. Okay. Anyway, so my thing is, it's a little bit of a plug, but a good friend of mine, Ben Howdall, he released, well, he does all sorts of things. He's a big side project fan. You know, he puts out a lot of side projects, a lot of them open source and things like that. But his latest project is a site or an app called Ekko, EKKO.site. And basically what it is a way for particularly small, as I would say, very small businesses, to get up a website simple, right? Which sounds like, okay, it's Squarespace or something like that. But the clever thing with it is what it does is it uses your Facebook page to create you a website. So it pulls in all the data from your Facebook page, your cover photo, your opening times, your posts, information about you, etc., all your photos and things like that, and puts them into a nicely designed website. And it's really intriguing, actually. And he asked me if I could help out and do a theme for it, which I did. Just they're all one page sites, so they're very, very simple, and it isn't something that I think is kind of going to, you know, it's not one of these, oh, it's just replacing web designers. You know, it's ideal for, you know, your friend who's all right using Facebook, because at the end of the day, a lot of people, or clients I should say, maybe don't know, you know, the ins and outs of a CMS, or they have to go and, you know, try and learn a CMS, but they know how to use Facebook because they use it every day, and they're quite comfortable posting to their Facebook page and things like that. And if they sort of have an audience within that, so why not, this is what he thought, why not just make it super easy and make Facebook the CMS? So that's what Ekko does, essentially. You connect it, and it, you choose a theme. I mean, there's a few on there at the moment. I think four or five themes, something like that. They're pretty simple at the moment. It publishes. You could choose a domain, and yeah, it's just super easy. As I say, it's not one of those that's going to replace, like, you know, web designers. In my opinion, it's just a really easy way for people who want a nice, easy one page site to get up, maybe for their cafe or something like that. You know, that You know, I mean, that's some of the examples that are on their site. But yeah, I thought it was a really interesting idea. As I say, he's a good friend of mine, and he's put a lot of time and effort into this on the side of his day job as well. So I just thought I'd cover that, really, because I think it raises
quite a lot of interesting points, because it raises an issue, you know, the issue of the fact that that very bottom end of the web design market is going away. And not just because of this, but because of, you know, like you say, Squarespace and Mix and all the other, the build your own website tools. And actually, I think that's not a bad thing. That's something that happened in desktop, when desktop publishing came along in print, that the very small stuff kind of was democratized and commoditized, yeah. That anyone could do it. And that actually was very healthy for the industry as a whole, even though it changed it. So that's one interesting thing that comes out of it. Another thing that comes out to, is the value of side projects. And how good it is to work on these different side projects. And then the other thing that I really like about this as well is the premise from which he has started. That he started, instead of starting with, how do we create, the ability for people to create their own websites if they're not, you know, very techie or whatever. He's instead started with something people already know and built on that. I really like that idea. I think that's a really clever idea.
My big question here is, how much does it cost?
I think his price point is a bit high.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the only criticisms that a couple of people have mentioned, is that, you know, it's not the cheapest thing. It's £16.50 a month, right? Which it isn't cheap, okay? It's kind of on a similar scale to Squarespace. It's probably around the same as Wix. I'm sure he's done some sort of, you know, research into this. He has only just come out of beta. I don't know which way you say it. So it's £16.50 a month, which is around $20 a month. So it's not the cheapest thing in the world, but it's still cheap, you know? And I think the thing is, you know, obviously he's put in a lot of work into this, but I don't know how necessarily he's come to that figure, whether it's because, you know, he's worked out the figures he needs to cover his costs and added some margin, or whether it's, you know, based on research around, you know, the market, etc. So that's how much it is.
But the other thing, sorry to interrupt you, Marcus, the one thing that you can do, and he might be doing, because I'm quite a fan of this, is price high but discount a lot. Because, you know, you can always go down in price. It's quite hard to go up in price after you've started. So starting high is always good. Sorry, Marcus, you were going to say something.
The reason why I had a reason for asking about the price is I have been in, as you all know, many bands over the years. And there are millions of bands, and probably literally millions of bands in the world, who all use Facebook as their website. And they will not pay £16.50 a month, but I bet they pay a fiver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We would have done, happily, because it's just so quick and easy. Let's just put a Facebook page up and you can just bung things out. Events, you know, the events module, you can use it for gigs and all that kind of stuff. So if you could put a theme on that and have your own URL, wow. Especially, but I can't see many bands being willing to spend £200 a year or whatever it is on it, but they probably would spend 50 quite happily. If not 100.
I think it's interesting, actually, because it can pull in anything that you can put on Facebook, so events, etc., get pulled into, you know, an events panel, etc. And if you don't have any, they just, you know, obviously aren't shown. There's definitely like huge potential in this idea, especially, like you say, Paul, you know, the fact that people know it. I think that was the thing that intrigued me the most, was the fact that people already use Facebook and they know it. And, you know, if you're essentially, The other thing is, you know, you're no longer having to go to your website and publish an update and then also publish it on Facebook. You publish it on Facebook, it goes out to your audience, but then it also goes to your website. So, it's a very interesting idea to me. And I hope it does well with it.
I think it's great. Yeah. Really good.
I think it's original and it's interesting and I like it. Cool. Good. All right, then. Well, check that out. So what's it? What's the URL for that, Dan? I don't think we actually said the URL, did we?
Yeah, it's echo.site, E-K-K-O.site.
Right, nothing's ever spelt as it sounds these days, is it?
Nope.
It's a bloody pain in the arse for podcasting, I'll tell you. Okay, there'll obviously be a link in the show notes as well. Who should we do next?
About Sam, because he missed out last week.
Pick Sam.
Oh. But the trouble with Sam is he's just doing another plug. He's as bad as Dan. It's all, go on then. We'll try and draw, we'll do what we did with Dan and try and draw out some useful lesson to the crap he's plugging.
Right, let's do this. Mr. Bowie, you're going to eat your words. So first of all, let's go with the plug. So it's just for a little event that I'm speaking at in April, which is called Ground Control. And you can look at the site at groundcontrolconf.com.
Oh, now that's very interesting you say that. I'm doing an excellent workshop at that particular event.
Are you now approving of this plug?
I wouldn't have brought it up personally. Right. But as you have, I feel it's important to stress that I have a full day workshop on the event, and that actually many people, not me, but many other people have said what an excellent workshop it would be to attend, especially if you're someone that's keen to make your organization more digitally friendly, and how it actually ties in very closely with a really good upcoming book.
The Food Revolution Workshop as well?
Yeah, Food Revolution Workshop. Absolutely. Sorry,
that's
Sam.
Okay, that's okay.
Just to cut across to you again, Sam, sure. which day are all the talks on? Because that's the one I'd be interested in.
I think it's the 21st of April.
Hang on.
Yeah, I think the workshops, I don't think they're even published what day they are. No one really cares.
They're on a Thursday.
You don't go to workshops these days anyway. Workshops are old school.
It's about food or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, socialising.
Oh, hang on. Is it 21st?
It's the after party.
Yeah, 21st.
Yeah, the talk's on the 21st. Even my wife is going.
Blimey.
Which kind of leads on to what you wanted to say.
That's a little bit, yeah. So the tagline for the event is a multi-track conference for digital project managers. And obviously, as you can imagine, this means that the audience is typically made up of these events of the kind of people like digital project managers, scrum masters, product owners, head of production, so on and so on. But I just think that now is a time where we really should be sort of appealing for other people in other areas to go to these kind of events. You know, so designers, developers, but also, I mean, it's really everybody, CEOs, MDs, biz dev people, clients. There's so many, I can't think of really of anyone that wouldn't benefit from this type of event. Mm. So I've just sort of quickly explained why I think that really. So when I think back to sort of 10 years ago in our industry, when we all kind of felt like we worked closer together, I think. But certainly there wasn't as much specialty as now. It was basically, I think we called it web design, didn't we? Web design and development. That was it. That kind of covered absolutely everything. And it was great. And I think, back then I was sort of front end developer, but then turned into a project manager. But even still, I think everyone was kind of reading the same stuff. Everyone was reading Smasher magazine or whatever it was. But it's kind of strange how the way we were working now, we're working together so much more closely as these, you know, co-located, cross-functional teams sort of thing. And yet our specialties have become so more massive that actually you're starting to silo off into events and resources. So, you know, whereas we used to read stuff on web design, which you can still do, there is now obviously a million different blogs and resources and even events geared towards, you know, not just JavaScript, but specific areas of JavaScript and very specific areas. So it's kind of as we're coming together during our working day, actually where we're reading and what we're attending, I think we're becoming a little bit more separated than I guess we used to be. Yeah. And I just think that things like, you know, it's called a conference for project managers, but really, as we all now know, it's about getting work out the door. And that is like right from pre-sales right to the very end. And it just makes me think that I'd like to kind of encourage others to start going to these events because we're working so closely together now, because we're doing very short cycles of work, everyone's ability to affect everyone else's work and thus the delivery, I think is actually greater than it used to be. I think in the old days, you know, you may have a delay in one area of a project, but you wouldn't even have handed over to the next waterfall style phase yet. So it wouldn't actually have such an immediate effect. You had time to deal with it. I just think people will be wondering, why should I go to an event that's for project management? And it's simply that. It's simply because I think the more you understand about how work is delivered, both the good things, the difficulties, not only are you going to sort of be more, I guess, have a bit more empathy for those involved more in the delivery side, but I think it also will make you better at your job. Because your job as a designer or a developer or a tester or whatever it might be is not, it's no longer measurable by the quality of just that output. I think that, you know, it's really measured by the output as a whole. You know, if you're a tester, or let's say you have a specialty and work in a scrum team, but perhaps within a few sprints, there isn't as much need for your specialty. Your ability to sort of understand the priority to ship and thus change tact or help a delivery manager or help test or just have that kind of awareness more so of what goes into delivering work, I think is a really good reason why both, you know, well, clients, anybody involved now, clients, managing directors could all benefit from going to conferences focused on delivery. Because when you actually go to these events, very rarely, I think people will assume they're about, you know, Gantt charts or burn down charts or whatever, but they're really not. As you know, Paul, I think, you know, you were someone I think has been quite pleasantly surprised by the kind of topics that are talked about these things. They're anything from sort of people management, leading teams to act. There are some practical stuff there, but it's also just sort of general awareness talks, you know, quite inspiring.
Well, I'm looking down the list of talks here and, you know, there's titles like Living with Imperfection.
Yeah.
Hunting Down Red Flags, Failure. That's the next one, Scrum. That's a bit kind of, project manager-y. You know, team building type stuff, diversity, post-launch success. I mean, these are things that apply to absolutely everybody.
Absolutely. I mean,
and every situation, don't they, really?
Completely. I don't see how knowing about this stuff won't make you better at your job. Now, I think it's not quite so transferable. So let's say I'm a project manager. Should I attend a, you know, JavaScript event?
I don't think
it's quite comparable. I mean, it may be. There are some that are kind of lighter or a bit more high level or more strategic than tactical, but I think as a general rule you could say that it wouldn't necessarily be as useful, but I wouldn't say not go. I think it's interesting to meet the people, interesting to see what is happening, or you can pick up things from conferences that aren't necessarily advertised at the conference, I guess is what I'm saying. And I think the days of advertising sort of project management specific events, even in digital, I kind of think maybe that's not quite right anymore, and we should be focused on delivery. And that's it for me, really. It's just that kind of thing that hit me of how sort of, we used to be looking at web design and development generically, but as we progress and work closer together, we are actually splitting up in terms of what we read and what events we go to. It's quite an interesting parallel.
Yeah, it is. And I you're right. It's not even just what events, you know, it's what we read about as well. We should be, you know, we talk about being T-shaped, don't we? Mm-hmm. You know, that you should have a broad knowledge across a lot of areas and then specialty in one. But when it comes to our reading, I don't think we are very T-shaped. I think we tend to just focus down on our area of interest and broad reading. You know, I, being subscribed to, for example, the stuff that you put out, Sam, or, you know, the stuff other people in other disciplines put out is really important to do. And that's why I've always kept this podcast very broad in what we cover.
But I think for me, I think I was mostly thrown into the things that have actually been retrospectively amazing for me. So when I had to, when I was thrown into selling, for instance, as a project manager thrown into selling, you know, initially I was thinking this, I'm not going to enjoy this, whatever. And I wouldn't say I loved it, but the stuff that I learned, I didn't learn specifically how to sell, but what I learned was what it was like to have sales as your priority and how that changes your priorities as a person at work, your mentality. And suddenly the comments that I would make to a salesman without having done it, I could see how they could be sort of sneered at. And it just kind of raises that awareness of other people's jobs, which I think in turn can only make you better at yours. I don't see how it can't. That's it.
Sam, write a book. Please write a book. I want to read the book you write.
Okay.
So, talking of people that have written a book, see, I did a segue then. That was really good. That was like a professional podcaster. Ryan,
that's actually a really good segue, because my book was about, well, my book's called Version Control with Git, and what I'm going to talk about is related to that.
So interesting, doesn't it? That's the kind of thing that I'd love to read. Version Control with
Git. It's only short. It's only a pocket guide. But the interesting thing is, it's actually available for free. You can download it as a PDF.
They're really valuable then.
Well, I put it up on Gumroad when Five Simple Steps closed.
Oh, you're right.
The interesting thing with Gumroad, I don't know if you ever used it, but when you actually put something on there, if you set the price to zero, the price field says set a fair price, and it defaults at zero. But you have to physically put in zero, and everyone does. So no one thinks a fair price for my book is worth anything more than nothing. So occasionally someone puts in like a dollar or a fiver. But I think about it every time an email comes through. It's kind of it kind of tints it a little bit in my mind. I think, oh, someone's downloaded my book and they think it's worthless.
There should be a way. There should be like at the end of a book, right? It should then ask you, you know, how much was that book worth at the end? Because how do you know at the beginning how much it's worth?
Yeah, very, very true. Then again, though, when was the last time you read a book to the end?
I always do read books to end.
Oh, no, I'm not without skipping to the last page and just reading the last page, like, all the way through.
No, I always read all the way through. Seriously.
Really?
Yeah, I'm very committed to my book reading.
All right.
I have at least 30 books that I'm only about a quarter of the way through.
Yeah.
No, I've got this. I think it triggers one of my OCD things that I can only read one. I can read one non-fiction and one fiction book at a time, and I have to read them to the end.
Yeah, I wish I had time for that kind of thing.
Well, I don't. All it means is that I've been reading the same book for 6 years.
Well, there you go. Which is practically the same thing.
Well, yeah. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
Okay, so this service that I'm going to recommend I forgot all about this because we just use it without even thinking. It's just so finely integrated into the way we deploy websites is a service called Deploy. Deployhq.com. It's by the guys who do it's Atech Media, so they've got several other products. They do Codebase and various other things, but the Deploy service is actually for managing the deployment of your applications and your websites, and you can hook it up to work with any. It hooks directly into GitHub. You create a project within the system. You tell it where the repo is in GitHub, and you can basically, whenever you need to deploy changes to a production server or a development server or a staging server, whatever you want to call it, it handles that process. It can FTP, it can SSH, and you can configure it however you need to. But what makes it really useful is you can set it to run additional commands before and after deployment. So if you need, so after you've deployed, you've done a deployment, if you need it to do an update on the server, you can add a command in that says, right, deploy the site and then run this command. If you need to put on, you know, a .ht access file or something like that onto the hosting, you can set it to create the file and tell it where to put. So those kinds of things are committed into your GitHub repo. So it's actually got a load of flexibility, and one of the really nice things about it, as do a lot of other services that do this kind of thing, but it works with webhooks, so it can automatically deploy. So when you're working on something and you merge a change into your master branch in Git and push that up to GitHub, that'll automatically deploy to your production server. So you haven't got to go into the system and actually manually deploy. You can actually, you know, it just comes completely integrated into your workflow, and you only ever have to go in if you need to just, you know, tweak the process in some way, which once you've got it all set up, very rarely happens. So I forgot about this because it's one of those things that once we kind of set it up once for a new project and then forget about it because our deployment process is all in place and implemented. But it's really useful, and it's for what it does and the way it helps you, it's not that expensive either. So
what is the pricing?
Well, it's got they have got a free plan where you can just do one project. So if you're an internal team or something like that, it's limited to how many deployments per day. But if you're only working on one website and it's an internal thing, then, you know, you're probably not going to more than 10 deployments a day anyway, which is what it's limited to. I think we're on the plus plan, which is 22 projects. But the basic plan's £6 a month.
Crikey, that's good. And even 22 projects is only £12.
Yeah, yeah,
It's not bad, is it?
So it's not bad, and the website hasn't been updated for a little while, but the actual interface, once you get in, I think it may have, I'm forgetting when it was actually released, it might have been the year before last, but the interface has actually had a big facelift, and it's a really nice system to use and really easy to configure. So
I like the idea of when you deploy, it can also then trigger other things to happen. Yeah. That's very useful. So, I mean, for example, trigger a clearing of cache, that kind of stuff would be very handy.
What we sometimes do is we'll have a staging server where we have uncompiled assets, like uncompiled CSS and JavaScript and everything for development. But we'll actually compile those assets. Ooh. So we won't commit them into the repo. We'll compile those assets on the server. So it does a deployment and then it'll run gulp. And that'll compile the assets on the server and then run compressed. So you can set up multiple servers per project. So you can have a production server, development server, however many you need. You can get commands to run on one particular server, but not on the other one. So if you need to do something differently. So it's really, really flexible, and it's non-obtrusive. It doesn't force you to do things in a certain way. So it will work with whatever hosting you've got it works with GitHub and Bitbucket and Codebase, which is Atec Media's equivalent of GitHub.
Right.
So they built this service where you aren't forced to use theirs and you aren't forced to use Bitbucket or GitHub. So
yeah.
I like services that kind of just slot in and solve one particular issue.
Yeah, and don't force you to work in a particular way.
Yeah, exactly. And this one does it very, very well.
Cool. Oh, I like that one a lot. That's good.
Cool.
Okay. Let's do Marcus. Let's do you next. It's only you and me, so we'll let you go next.
The irony. We've just had to stop, and I'm going to talk about recording recording techniques on audio recording techniques on when you're doing podcasting.
It is quite funny that we've literally just had to restart the recording.
But I'll start at the top. Which is kit. I think there are really only two important items kit-wise, and they are a decent microphone and a decent pair of headphones. The mic's fairly obvious. If you're using a crappy mic, then you're going to sound, tinny and stuff. So if you use a better quality mic, then you're going to sound warmer and fuller and all those kind of things. But the headphones are almost more important. The reason being is the editor, and I'm kind of coming at this from the audio editor point of view, is that overspill, I'll explain what that is in a minute, is an absolute nightmare. So if you've got a decent pair of headphones that cover your entire ears, and they're not the kind of semi-open variety, they're the fully closed variety, basically when all you guys speak, that sound isn't leaking out, overspilling into my microphone. And that's what often happens if I get lots of different audio tracks come in that I have to put together, I'll find that somebody, there's always one person, it sounds like they've got their speakers on loud while they're recording. And you're getting them fine, but you're getting everybody else as well.
Yeah.
Which is a major pain. A little tiny bit, there's always a silver line, isn't it? A little tiny bit of overspill actually can help sometimes, because it means I can sync exactly. So, because if I'm getting people that started recording in different places, you have to move them around to get everybody in sync. A tiny little bit of overspill can actually help that process. But generally speaking, you don't want any.
Going back to mic, you skipped over mic.
Yes.
Do we want to give people a recommendation of a mic to
use? There are so many. If you're willing to spend, I don't know, if you spend £100 on a mic, you'll get one that's plenty good enough. I think maybe a place to start.
So I use a Rode Podcaster mic, which is very good. But for years I used a Snowball. Which was very good as well. Now, Sam, you had a suggestion for a mic a very lightweight, quite cheap travel mic that I got and was actually very good. And now I've forgotten what it's called.
A Samsung Go mic. So not Samsung, Samsung Go mic. It is the tiniest little thing you've ever seen. It's what I'm using now. I put it on a proper stand with a bit of a pop filter. And I think it sounds absolutely fine. I think it was, I don't know how much it was. Hang on, if you give me 2 seconds.
It's not massively expensive.
It was fine. I mean, where is it? I can't find it now. It's really not. I think it was under 50 quid easily. It's the size, the sort of height of your thumb, really, I think, and probably twice as wide, and that's it. And it just seems to work great. There's just had no issues with it at all.
It's £40 on Amazon.
Okay.
It's not a fiver. I think don't use just any old crappy thing that you've got lying around if you're gonna
and definitely don't use the one built into your Mac.
No.
Because that's very kind of tinny and it picks up everything from everywhere. You want one you could get good and close to. Really.
I think on that overspill thing as well, Marcus, I think I did that on my first Boag World appearance. I think I did the kind of headphones, the one headphone in my ear, letting the other one dangle down, not realizing that was dangling right by the mic. I had no idea.
There are certain things you can do. You can use kind of noise gating, which it'll take away stuff, audio that only comes up to a certain level, so you can kind of use a noise gate so that when you start talking, you're much louder. So obviously that, and so the microphone will turn on as you start talking, and then it'll turn off again when you don't, and all that kind of that much lower overspill will get cut out. But there's a point when that stops working, and you end up sounding like you're being cut in and out too much.
What software do you use, Marcus, to actually edit the podcast? Or
I use Logic Audio, which is over the top for editing a podcast. You don't need anything this sophisticated to do it. But they all kind of, you know, they're all these graphical interfaces with different tracks that move left to right as, you know, as the recording is going. And you can see the different, I'm watching my little audio wave files appearing as I'm speaking. And you can basically cut them into, you know, as you're editing, you're graphically cutting those files up. So I think pretty much all editors work in that way. I don't think it's a really important aspect of recording good audio, I suppose is what I'm trying to say. The microphone and headphones are much more important.
The only thing that I've found with audio software that's quite nice is if your audio software has got a basic noise filter functionality.
Yeah.
So, for example, in my office, I have a fan that likes to randomly turn on. Or even the fan in your MacBook if you're recording or whatever, and you can get this kind of hum in the background. So having something that can remove that's quite nice.
There's also another kind of this standard effect, if you like, that recording engineers use, which is compression. And whatever you're recording onto whatever recording software you're using, it's good if it's got decent compression software in it, and all that's doing is kind of it's squashing the lows up to the middle and the highs back down to the middle, so you're literally compressing the sound.
If you have Adobe Creative Suite, like the monthly subscription or the full suite, you get access to Audition as well, which is pretty good. It's got some good features, but again, that's probably overkill generally for editing something. But if you've got Creative Suite, you've already got that software.
Yeah. And Audacity is a nice free one, isn't
it? I just stopped using Audacity for converting to final conversion to MP3 because Logic didn't do it that well, but now it does. I finally binned Audacity. Next thing I wanted to talk about is mic technique. And this really just comes down to stay on the bloody mic, because I'm going away from the mic now and then I'm coming back onto it. But one thing we're kind of guilty of, I don't know if you notice with singers, they're always kind of pulling the mic away, you know, onto their mouth and away and all that kind of thing. All they're doing is when they're singing loud, they pull it away, and when they're singing quietly, they bring it up close. And
about babies in the background?
Babies in the background.
No, I can do about that.
One thing we're guilty of is when we all laugh, we stay on the mic, because obviously staying on the mic is really important. But if we want to get really loud, we should pull back up a little like this and then come back again when we want to talk.
That's a lot of thinking when you're laughing. I get it, but. Yeah.
I don't think I've got that in.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting we have to do this, but it's just this is about good practice when you're using a microphone.
It's going to be a weird recording next week when we're all thinking about these things. We're all kind of fading in and out, and like, I want to laugh, but I can't remember. Is it in or is it out? Is it through it? I missed the joke.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I'm doing it out of, like, fear.
Well, that's quite funny, because when you were getting very animated there, Ryan, and you, you know, your microphone overloaded and it clipped, and that's what we're talking about avoiding, really.
There we go.
It does bring you nice.
Very naughty, Ryan.
Oh, I'm just a terrible recorder.
It brings me nicely onto Zencaster, which is what we've been using lately to record, which is superb. Basically, it kind of does all the recording software bit on its own, if you like. And when Paul pulls everything together, it compresses it. I was talking about compressing earlier, because we're all going in at different levels, and the file that I get given back from Paul, we're all kind of nicely level, usually. Maybe it goes in and out a bit, but it's compression software in there. But we've been having problems, as I started off this little segment with Zencaster, where we're getting the odd kind of time when somebody's echoing really badly. And we thought two or three weeks ago, because Lee pointed it out to me, Paul, he said, you went really weird and robotic sounding at the end of whichever one 2 weeks ago's episode. Did I? I said. And it's exactly the same thing that happened to Ryan last week. And we thought it wasn't going down locally, but it was.
Okay.
I have to admit, Ryan, that last week I had to edit I had to edit whole sections of you out of the show. Because we just thought, oh, it'll be all right. And it wasn't. And then that's the nightmare scenario for the editor. It's like, I've got to take you might have talked for 3 minutes about something, and then Paul will have pulled stuff out of that and commented on it, and then somebody will refer to it later. And you've got to, as the editor, you've got to think, right, you've got to really use your brain and listen to the entire show to make sure that the continuity is there between the bits once you've removed those bad bits.
And nobody wants to listen to an entire episode of this.
Well, no, I was going to say that, you know, if I listened through to entire episodes every week and edited all the ums and ahs out of it, then I'd never get any other work done. That's a very big job. And what I do, and this is one recommendation, is take notes. If anything goes wrong, then, you know, you just go, oh, right, at, you know, 32 minutes, 30 seconds or whatever, I need to go back in and have a look at that.
That's another nice thing about Zencaster, is you can drop in timeline footnotes as well for when things do go wrong, which is nice.
But sometimes,
and of course, the other thing that it does, which you didn't explicitly say, but which is that if you have multiple speakers like we have at the moment, it's going to sync up all of those for you and create a single audio file, which is lovely.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a really useful thing. I guess we've just. The experiences we've had with issues the last couple of weeks has got me saying to everybody, you need to record locally as well. And then if you have got a separately recorded local file, then in Ryan's case last week, I could have just said, Ryan, I've got a problem with this. Send me over your local version. I could have just cut it in, which had made my life a lot easier. But you've just got my final point is sometimes you've got to be prepared to go through the entire thing. Just to kind of keep the continuity going if there's a problem. And that's it, really, unless you've got anything to add.
Well, the only thing I was going to add at the end is just that if you are interested in podcasting, if it's something that you're considering doing, maybe, or even, you know, wondering what the benefit is of it.
Have you got a book?
No, I haven't, actually. No. I'm going to recommend somebody else. One of the guys that I mentor and work with is an expert in podcasting, and he's written all kinds of really great guides on the best equipment, how to become a good podcaster, the benefits of podcasting to your business, all of that kind of stuff. You can find out more about that at thepodcasthost.com. Really great resources that I highly recommend. Okay. Do you know what will skip me this week? Because I've plugged my book. My book can be my pick for the week. So there we go. Right, let's talk about our second sponsor, and then we will wrap up today's show. It's Proposify, that allows you to say goodbye to using InDesign and other design tools to create great-looking proposals. You can now just use Proposify instead, save yourself a heck of a lot of time. It has got some great design tools in it that allow you to produce really great looking proposals. You've got access to over 800 Google fonts, so you can match it with your style guide. You can also go in and edit the style sheets if you want. You can change colors, size, and like all everything that you could want to do from a design point of view. It's got built in. It's got some really nice pricing table features as well, giving you lots of flexibility in terms of how your pricing tables appear. You can obviously add images easily, whether those be infographics or even video. You can put video in as well. You can change the layout of how your images are displayed, all the kind of control you'd expect. We've also got really nice cover pages, so you can create a kind of high impact cover for your proposals. And you've got the ability to have all the kind of things you'd find in a design tool for like repeating headers and footers and page numbers and all of that kind of stuff. If you can't be bothered to do all of that, if you don't want to create a custom template that goes exactly with your brand identity, maybe you're a smaller setup which doesn't have all that kind of stuff in place, they've got a gallery of loads of pre-designed templates that look really nice that you can just help yourself to and get going. And then most of all, your proposal is going to work anywhere, which is really good. It's mobile friendly. They're also interactive as well, which is obviously makes them a lot better to traditional proposals. So if you want to try out Proposify, see how you can make your proposals very simply, but also to make them high impact, then go to proposify.biz/BoagWorld. So, Marcus, do you have a joke for us?
I do. I picked one of Daryl Snow's many, many jokes from the Boag World Slack channel, which is, what do you give a cannibal that shows up late for dinner?
Go on.
The cold shoulder.
That's actually quite good. I quite like that one. Right. Yeah, I don't know why we do jokes. It's such a weird thing. Let's do where we can find out about people. Ryan, where can we find out about you?
We're nodividestudio.com, and I'm at Ryan Havoc on Twitter.
And Dan?
Oh, also nodividestudio.com, but on Twitter I am at DE.
And Sam?
I'm at thesambarns.com and on Twitter at thesambarns.
And Marcus?
Headscape.co.uk. That'll do.
And next season, I just want to very quickly talk about next season before we wrap up. Just a reminder that next season we're going to do lightning talks, where anybody can create a pre-recorded 10 to 15 minute talk. And it's a great opportunity if you've never spoken at an event because it terrifies you, or you just want to get your name out there. We're accepting talks from absolutely anybody. We're going to do it. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'm going to do it on a first come, first serve basis, right? So if you get in a talk to me, it will be on the show. If you're late and it takes you ages to get to a talk, talk to me, it might not make it to the show, but it will be posted on the website. All right. So every single talk I receive, we are going to put on the air. All right. Or, well, not necessarily on the air, on the website. I really just want to give everybody an opportunity to share something they've learned. It doesn't need to be very much. I just want to make it so that as many people as possible can start to get the exposure that they deserve. I want to see a lot more people other than the same old names being seen again and again. To find out exactly how that works, go to boag.world/season18. Please send me stuff soon, because I get nervous about not having enough content for the next season. So don't make me suffer. And send Paul, me stuff.
Paul, can I just say that for anyone listening who would like some help with that, as someone that found, well, still find speaking quite difficult, actually, I kind of understand what it's like. So honestly, maybe contact me on Twitter or something. We can swap addresses and actually have a chat about what you can talk about or anything you're worried about, because I think a lot of people don't realise how difficult others find it, and I think you can get past it.
Yeah, I think that's a really great idea. And remind people again what your Twitter ID is, Sam?
At the Sam Bonds.
And the same applies to me as well. If you want some advice about how to make that work, how to get the most out of it, I've put a load of stuff in that URL I just gave you. But please, feel free to contact me as well. Especially if you've never done this before, especially if you're nervous, I really want to help people out to get going on this. All right, so that's it for this week. Join us again next week when we will be doing more Point for Swap. But until then, goodbye.
Bye.